Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 587.
Today we hear from Ian, who asks,
there have been quite a few questions lately about writing with chronic pain and managing energy. What about when things are going well? How did the pulp writers not burn out doing NaNoWriMo every month or even every week? A lot of them fell victim to a lifestyle of cigars and whiskey, but some of them seem to do that still, even now. I understand Brian Garfield of Death Wish fame was publishing away until recently and maybe still is, and of course Dean Wesley Smith and Lawrence Block are still very active. What is their secret?
Well, getting past the whiskey is a big part of it. So one of the early secrets of the pulp writers was, in fact, speed. Amphetamines, whiskey, lots of coffee, lots of drugs, and most of them died from it, or died from secondary health effects caused by it, or died from things related to the psychological crap they were carrying around that drove them to the drugs in the first place. And of course, some of them did burn out creatively. Lester Dent is one of those. They woke up one day and they were just kind of done with what they were doing, and they weren't interested in branching out into new things. However, then you've got the Jack Williamsons, the Lawrence Blocks, the Dean Wesley Smiths, the Nora Robertses. There's a massive cadre of writers that both survived the pitfalls of success and managed to conquer their own personal demons enough to shift the drugs off to one side, and lived long enough that smoking became unfashionable, so shifted the cigarettes off to one side, which is more dangerous than most of the drugs. And you wind up with a group of people who can just keep going and going and going like the Energizer Bunny. There's a couple of secrets to this. The first is a workmanlike ethic. Let's see if I can find an interesting way to explain this rather than the boring way to explain this. Part of our job as fiction writers, when we're writing a story that's really close to our hearts, is to find a way to make the familiar strange. Everybody knows what it's like to lose a pet. Everyone knows what it's like to lose a friend. Everybody knows what it's like to have your heart broken or to fall in love. And if you don't now, don't worry. Wait a little while and you will. Everyone knows that they're going to die. Everyone knows what it's like to be under the boot heel of a repressive organization. Everyone knows what it's like to have fantasies of fighting back. And some people know what it's like to actually fight back. So once you strip the trappings of the murder mystery or the science fiction or the travelogue or the Bildungsroman or whatever away, what you wind up with are stories about everyday things. All stories eventually are either about big ideas or about everyday human experience, and some of the best ones are about both. And when you're writing about everyday human experience, the difficult part is making it interesting, because it's every day. Everybody knows about it. So while you have the hook of identification, where you can tap into someone, you also run the risk of boring the hell out of people, because it is the everyday stuff. So a lot of the fiction writer's job is to make the familiar strange, to find a way to take these everyday experiences and look at them in a fresh light or from a fresh angle or in some way that excites the novelty-seeking impulse in human beings so that people stick around long enough for the familiar to become familiar again, but in a way that brings it to life for them emotionally. Well, the great secret of doing this every day, as far as I can tell, is making the strange familiar. When something becomes routine, when something becomes habit, when something becomes just the thing you do every day, you build muscles for it, whether that thing is moving refrigerators or welding or building bookshelves or moving boxes or lifting weights or running 5 miles or hiking 20 miles or writing 3,000 words. That which is normal, that which is routine, that stuff you routinize, your body builds muscles for and your brain builds subroutines for. Your brain sets the baseline. You're doing 3,000 words today. You're doing 1,000 words today. Whatever your daily word count standard is, it doesn't take very long to fall right into that. Producing the words is another thing like moving stuff, lifting weights, whatnot. You establish a baseline, and as long as you remain in the habit, as long as what you're doing is boring instead of special, oddly enough, as long as it's routine, it's no big thing to do it. Now, like with weightlifting and running and whatnot, there are things you have to do to maintain. You have to. You know, with weightlifting and running, you have to be on guard for injuries, but you also have to eat enough calories to satisfy the demands of the work that you're putting in. So the calorie consumption, say, of a Tour de France racer, way higher than the calorie consumption of even the most burly, overweight, sedentary rider. And they're all skinny. It's because they're burning it all, rather than burning some of it, storing the rest of it. Your creativity works the same way. You have to be feeding the monster. This is what I talk about, feeding the monster. I imagine this vast monster in your subconscious that eats every idea and concept and experience it can come up with and digest them and poops out stories. That's basically what you're doing. You have to continue to feed the creative hopper. Now, one of the things you'll notice with these hyper-prolific authors is that a lot of them get pretty stale. Not all of them, though. Like, for example, Jack Williamson or Jack Vance never got stale. Phil Dick, despite the fact that he only had one subject, never got stale. The trick to never getting stale is to continue to expand your personal, intellectual, and experiential horizons rather than remaining trapped with the set of templates you entered adulthood with, which is what most people do, and even what most writers do. They may dress them up in different ways, but they remain trapped. By remaining trapped, I'm not talking about having favorite things that you revisit again and again. Every artist does that. All of the greatest artists did that. That's part of what defines your author voice, is your suite of concerns. But your suite of concerns should be evolving over the course of your career, not moving away from your primary area of concerns, but expanding outward. Those concerns may remain at the center of your universe, but your new experiences and intellectual horizons will alter the way that you interact with those concerns, and that keeps what you're doing creatively fresh and also interesting for you. So that's the other trick. It's the habit and the exploration. If you do not have one of those, if you don't have the habit, you may produce some very good work, but there's not going to be much of it. And statistically speaking, that reduces your chances of having something catch the popular consciousness. So there's problems with that. Also, you're going to be sitting around a lot at your keyboard being bored, or off doing things and wishing you were writing and not doing much of that. And the books you do write will be much more of a torture for you because you're out of the habit. So every time you sit down to write, you have to relearn the habit. I'm going through this right now, and I'm a very prolific writer, and the last year has knocked me completely off beam because I've been doing stuff that simply did not leave the energy or the room to write, and it was life and death type of stuff. So now it's all over, and I get to write again. And I'm having that experience I used to have before I was an everyday novelist, where I sit at the keyboard and I go, what the hell am I doing? And so I'm having to go through sort of a mini version of what I went through at the beginning of my career to form the habits again. It's big pain in the ass. But I know from experience, because I've fallen off the wagon a couple of times before and had to climb back on, I know from experience that about 6 weeks from now, I'll be back up to my old tricks. Maybe quicker this time, since I've gone through it a few times. And that will be fantastic. And then I'll have this whole year of crazy experiences to mine, and that will change my stories and make them interesting and fresh in different ways, and that's cool. So you don't have the everyday discipline, then you run into that problem. But if you don't feed the monster, you will become stale. And here's the trick to feeding the monster. Stephen King was right about this, and I cite him even though I don't like his books. Anyway, I've gone into that before. Stephen King was right about this. You write what you're afraid of, but I'm going to extend it out. You study what you're afraid of. You experience what you're afraid of. If you use your fear as a sensor net, sort of an alarm bell telling you, over there behind that bush where you're hearing the really scary noises, that's something you ought to go investigate. Instead of, that's something you ought to stay away from. If you use fear as a simple inversion, your life will open up rapidly. And your creative horizons will expand just as fast. It will be hard. There are reasons you're afraid of stuff that can't eat you. Most of those reasons are buried down deep psychologically. You know, they're adaptations you've made to difficult things you've encountered before, either in your upbringing, stuff that happened so early that you can't remember it, stuff that happened in high school, say, for example, that you think you've moved past, but it's left this lasting scar. Everybody's got those things that they're afraid to go there because the things that they'll have to face, the reminders of things that they were happy to get past, are too thick on the ground. But it's true for creativity, and it's true for people who are trying to actually recover from trauma psychologically. Revisiting the things that scare you from a different angle is the way that you create a situation where they don't have power over you anymore. Phobias are self-reinforcing. You're afraid of one thing, and then you're afraid of the things that remind you of that one thing because you don't want to experience the fear and hurt that the one thing represents. And then you become afraid of the things that remind you of that one thing. And then you become afraid of the things that remind you of the things that remind you of that one thing, and the circle expands. This is how you get a downward spiral of fragility. If you want to have a bold creative career, and indeed a life that's not defined by ever shrinking borders, you want to flip your fear on its head and use it as an indicator of where you need to grow instead of as an indicator of what you need to avoid. Of course, you do want to make exceptions for things like hungry tigers and sharks when there's blood in the water and stuff like that. Be sensible, but you can use your aversive tendencies and the things that hem you in as the key to your own liberation. And that works personally, and it definitely works creatively. So that's the secret. And I have seen this up close and personal with some of these prolific writers who have managed not to go stale. They are people who explore what they're afraid of. They explore what disgusts them. They explore what they don't approve of. Because that's where the most potent emotional energy in their personal universes lies. And that potent emotional energy is really important to constructing stories that grab the reader by the gonads and do not let go. That's the trick. So those are the two tricks. So those are the tricks. And if there's anything else about this topic that you want me to talk about or that you think I'm full of crap about, please let me know. I'm always happy to hear those and make those into episodes too. Thank you very much for the question, Ian. And I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.